Hey everyone, it's Jacqueline Melanick. Welcome to Chain Reaction, a show that unpacks and dives deep into the latest trends, drama, and news, breaking things down block by block for the crypto curious. This year, we're doing monthly series diving into different topics and themes in crypto. Last month was NFTs, and this month we're focusing on blockchains integrating AI. We're speaking to a number of founders and startups about how they're looking at the two technologies, what are the best ways to bring AI on chain, and the benefits that are yet to come from it. Hope you enjoy. Today's guest is Tegan Klein, the CEO and co-founder of Edge and Node. The company is focused on creating and supporting decentralized applications, or dApps as we like to call them, and protocols. It was also the initial team behind the Graph, an indexing and query protocol, or what some has referred to as the Google of Web3, which aims to organize open blockchain data and make open data a public good. Tegan began her career in investment banking before shifting to work as an executive VP of a patent marketplace powered by blockchain and analyzed by AI. This kickstarted her career in Web3, data, and AI solutions. And just before starting Edge and Node, Tegan worked as an international business development manager for Orchid, an A16Z and Sequoia VC-backed VPN. I'm excited to have her on the show today to talk about all things blockchain and AI. Tegan, welcome to the show. Tegan, to start off, can you kind of explain the relationship between Edge and Node and the Graph? Like, what has your role been at each and how do they work together?
Absolutely. Yeah. So back in the day, it was about 14 of us that launched the Graph's decentralized network. So we had one company, it was called The Graph. But right before that launch, the Graph Foundation was born and so was Edge and Node. And the Graph became the decentralized technology, similar to how Bitcoin is the decentralized technology. There's no company called Bitcoin or the same for Ethereum. And so with that, the Graph is there to be the internet's unbreakable open data layer to ensure that the Web3 platform is realized with decentralized data. And if you look at kind of Web2 today, or the web that we use today, which we call Web2, some of the problems with it is centralized. And a handful of large companies own and control everything that we see online. They own kind of our data and our digital footprint. They can deplatform us. They want to keep our attention. They're monetizing that attention. And so it's not the internet that we had high hopes for back in the day in the early days of the web. And so with Web3, we're trying to realize that decentralized internet and kind of give power back to the users. So one analogy that people like to use is kind of what Google does for the web, the Graph does for Web3 and blockchains and organizing that data and making it really easy to access.
Right. Can you kind of walk us through how the Graph network works? I've heard in the past you say it's like an internet open layer. Like, what does that exactly mean?
So with the Graph network, it is decentralized. So instead of there being one Google that organizes information, there are many different indexers on the Graph. And you could think of these as independent Google-like companies that are organizing data. So they're syncing applications, they're syncing what we call subgraphs. And these subgraphs are open APIs, and you can think of them like an application. And they then serve queries. So anytime you use an application that's built on the Graph, the indexers are in the background organizing that data and serving that information.
When you search on Google, they're going to show you the results, either A, that's sponsored at the top, or the ones that they want to show you first, right? But in this situation, how does it kind of determine when I search something or I'm indexing data, what comes up first?
Maybe it would be helpful if I share some examples. So one example of an application building on the Graph is Artblocks. It's an NFT marketplace. And so when you search on Artblocks, or when you use that website or application on your phone, that data and information is being pulled in the background via the Graph, similar with Snapshot. So that's a DAO example, decentralized governance, and all of that data and information, historical, current, is all pulled via the Graph. There are also browsers similar to Google. So Jackie, kind of to your question, they're organizing information, but they're giving autonomy to users. So one example is Geo, and Geo is a Web3 browser project building on the Graph. And there are different spaces, and these spaces can be physical or digital. So one space is San Francisco, local government. A lot is happening in there to help make changes in San Francisco for the better. So you choose as an individual on this Web3 browser which space you want to access and which information you want to see. And you can even kind of choose your moderation policy based on these spaces. So you have agency to kind of dictate which spaces you want to be a part of. So it's kind of the user's choice to see where they want to go on the web, as opposed to just whoever pays for the ad space.
Okay, I like that, that it's the user's choice. And when it comes to companies that are part of the graph, do they kind of come and reach out to you and say, hey, we want to be a part of this, or do you do the outreach? How does that relationship kind of form?
So back in the day, early days, when we were working on building the network and protocol, we worked with a handful of developers that were building in Web3. They were building different applications. LivePeer is one example, which is kind of decentralized YouTube, if you will. And then Uniswap is another example, which is a decentralized exchange. And so we really kind of built based on their needs. And that's where the subgraph was born. And now subgraphs, you know, there's tens of thousands of subgraphs. Almost every application uses a subgraph to display their UIs and their content. And today it's permissionless. So anyone can spin up an application on the Graph network using the technology.
Okay. And so is the community also like customers in this situation then?
Yes. So the users of the application, so how it all kind of works and how it's decentralized is via the GRT token. It's a utility work token. You should only ever purchase what you intend to use in the network. And so with that, the users can pay in GRT to access the data on these applications. Or what we've seen today is a lot of these applications or their foundations will pay for that on behalf of their users to reduce friction at the UI level.
Got it. That makes sense. So kind of looking beyond Web3, what kind of role do you think all of this can have on the broader internet? Obviously, a lot of these things are Web3 focused and it makes sense, you know, decentralized and everything that's kind of within the bread and butter of this industry. But when you're looking beyond the crypto ecosystem, where do you see it going?
Yeah, great question. I think, you know, Web3, we're still working on building it out. Bitcoin was kind of on the monetary policy side. I think that that's proven and it's incredible to see kind of regulators and Wall Street giving Bitcoin the nod of approval. Web3, on the other hand, is still being built and we're still working on kind of building this decentralized internet that is censorship resistant. And so the innovation is happening today. And with that, I believe that this is where the internet will go. This will be the next evolution of the internet. And so it's kind of a growing industry as opposed to a shrinking one, which is kind of how I view Web2 and legacy financial system and also legacy tech industry.
As this is kind of like evolving and you're seeing it like pan out over the years, what has the feedback been towards indexing data from non-Web3 companies? Are they weary of it, interested, or does it really kind of depend on who they are?
It definitely does depend. So I would say in the traditional web or Web2 today, a lot of the business model is based on kind of owning that data and monetizing that data in some form or another, be it with ads or other actions. So with that, some companies have actually joined in to the Graph ecosystem. So Deutsche Telekom is one example. They are an indexer on the Graph's decentralized network. But, you know, I think that this is going to change over time. And it's interesting to look at how Bitcoin proliferated, if you will, and early days, not a lot of people bought into the concept of Bitcoin. And with that, it grew mindshare in the background. And now we've seen that change. I think the same thing will happen with Web3 with time.
Why do you think it took so long for data indexing to happen? And why isn't there really much competition out there for something like this outside of the graph?
So back in the day, you didn't really have a way to query the blockchain. You had to spin up your own indexer internally, which is a really difficult thing to do. These projects and companies and entrepreneurs, they just want to build really amazing applications. And so you could almost imagine it was like building out your own internet in your house as opposed to pushing that to Comcast or building out your own telecom internally inside your house instead of, you know, outsourcing that to Verizon as an example. So it was really cumbersome. And that's why there wasn't a lot of development on these different blockchains. And with the emergence of the graph, we always wanted it to be decentralized. That was very important to us from day one, because we believe that the data should be incorruptible and it shouldn't be dictated by one company. The indexer should really have agency across many different jurisdictions. And that's what we built. And with that, DeFi was born. And you saw, because of the graph, these different use cases and applications in Web3 were born. And we have DeFi, NFTs, DAOs today. But that's really just the tip of the iceberg. And like I said, we're still working as an ecosystem on ensuring all parts of the Web3 stack are truly decentralized. And with that, we'll see many new use cases, many new business models. And that's what we wake up every day to bring to reality.
Yeah. And that's like a lot of heavy lifting for companies to do this, especially when they could just work with you guys and still reap the benefits without creating a whole new division. It kind of reminds me of like these brands and companies that just wanted to get into the Web3 world, but they're not going to hire like a staff of 10 or so people to create it. They'll just partner with a company that already knows how to do this, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that actually reminds me of another point, which is just a lot of Web2 companies and centralized companies leverage the data that exists on the graph because it is public, because it is open. They're actually querying the graph in the background.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. You know, they want the benefits, but they might not fully dive in, right?
Yes, at least at the start. Yes. But I'm optimistic.
Okay. I also wanted to shift gears a little bit to talk about your new era roadmap that came out in November, or the graph's new era roadmap. For context, it's a really ambitious plan for how to implement the $50 million it raised last year. The objectives include expanding its data services to reach a bigger market, supporting developers, boosting network performance, and creating tools for data, kind of in simpler terms. You know this, Tegan. I'm just, you know, sharing this with our audience. But out of all the objectives thus far, which one do you see the most promise for?
Yeah, I mean, so many. I'm really excited about SQL and then AI. So AI is actually an umbrella. You have LLMs and you also have image generation, audio generation, so other neural networks along with that. So LLMs are really the most popular one today because of the work done by OpenAI. People are really excited about inference. So being able to kind of search data. And the one thing that's really important about AI is that it's all about data. You know, there's a saying that who rules the data rules the world. And so it really is important that that data is not owned and controlled by any one company, especially in the AI space. And so you can use the data from the graph to access this blockchain data and train the AIs using that data. So I'm really excited, I would say, probably about AI. But since we started the graph, the use cases and the data needs have exploded. There are so many different data needs, and the graph network will be there to serve all of those needs in a decentralized way for entrepreneurs and builders in the ecosystem, and thus the users of their applications and projects.
Yeah, and we're actually, of course, going to talk about AI more in the second half of this episode, given that this month is focused on blockchains and AI. And I'm glad you brought up LLMs or large language models, because that makes so much sense to me since the graph is already gathering and indexing data. I'm curious, before we go into the rapid fire segment, if you could share a use case or a few going beyond the Web3 space that you kind of see developing from these things.
Yeah, I think that one area that I'm really excited about is kind of this concept of agents. And this was early days of Bitcoin. People were really excited about kind of self-sovereign agents. One example is with Tesla. You could imagine a Tesla self-driving car that takes passengers, they pay in Bitcoin, and then it uses that Bitcoin to charge itself. And it could have autonomy. Now, if that AI is centralized, you can just kind of shut down the servers. But with blockchains and Web3, you can imagine a self-sovereign AI. Now, you know, fast forward, we're past, what, a decade later, and, you know, I drive a Tesla and it's like, put your hands back on the wheel. If you don't put your hands back on the wheel, I am stopping self-driving. And it's funny because that's kind of a form of censorship. It's like we purchased the Tesla, but the Tesla is then telling us how to govern it, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that kind of in with more controversial examples with the Google AI and even, you know, OpenAI's ChatGPT. Certain questions it just won't answer. So it's interesting to kind of see that censorship among these AIs.
Yeah, but how do you think that'll kind of change over time? Is it through the indexing of data that, like, as it becomes more and more open and decentralized, that it'll have no choice but to just take the best fact? Or I don't know how that would work.
Yeah, how I imagine it. So with the graph network, you have these indexers, and these indexers can then serve these different AI models. And the indexers will have agency to decide which AI models they would like to serve, just like they have that agency with the applications they serve today. And so with that, there will be many different models. There will be many different examples of censorship, and you can choose, you as the individual kind of have freedom to choose which one you would like to use. And, you know, there's some that are great. There are some that kind of hallucinate or they make things up. And so the way these are trained is really important. And if you look at even the open source AIs today, they are open source in some ways, but the data that they are trained with is not open source. And even if it were to audit it, it takes so much, it's so expensive to audit that. So it's, you know, instead of doing the audit before, you're kind of learning afterwards and you learn about these AIs and if they're a good AI or not, and if you want to trust it or not. But it's really kind of about the individual and your choice to choose which ones you trust and which ones you don't.
Okay. On that note, Tegan, we're going to take a quick break before we get into the rapid fire segment. And we are back. Now is time for our rapid fire segment where I ask Tegan some quick questions and hopefully she gives us some quick answers. Tegan, you ready?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay. If you had to pick, you can only support one, protocols or dApps, which would it be?
It's tricky because we all need each other, but I would say the dApps just because the graphs, the infrastructure serving these applications.
All right. Aside from Ethereum, which blockchain do you see the most promising?
I would say all the layer twos, but maybe that's a cop out. So if I had to pick one, I would go with the legend that started us out, which is Bitcoin.
All right, fair. Best crypto conference you've attended?
DevCon.
Any specific one or just DevCons in general?
My favorite was DevCon Prague, but they're all amazing.
All right, I got to get out to Prague. Everyone keeps talking about that place. Can you use one word to describe EdgeNode today?
I would say revolutionary.
Okay. And this kind of, I think I know the answer to this one, but yes or no, do you see a future for AI in blockchains?
Absolutely. I think they need each other.
Okay. Moving out of the rapid fire segment, looking at AI, a lot of people say they do need each other, as you just mentioned, but do you think blockchains need AI more or does AI need blockchains more? Do you think they even care? I always wonder if that's up in the air. Like we have these conversations, but like, are they having similar conversations too?
I think that, you know, if you go to a traditional AI conference, they do not care. The majority of them do not care yet. So right. I would say, I think the blockchain space is a little bit more interested in AI than AI is interested in the blockchain space. But I do think that that will evolve and shift over time, kind of looking at business models. And we touched on earlier ads, and a lot of the most brilliant minds are focused on ads and just selling us things. And I think that that can shift and using these new business models, these new incentive structures that have emerged via tokens and these token economies and decentralized infrastructure. I think that that's when things will get really interesting for AI. And then, of course, when you get into this concept of, you know, a self-sovereign AI, you need the blockchain space for that. So we have to do a little bit more red pilling, if you will, in the AI community.
What kind of role do you think indexing data will play in powering Web3 super apps? And like when it comes to this, is it automated and then it has no interference with intermediaries or anything, or does it require human interaction?
Yeah. So today, the landscape on the graph and with this data, it's very much human action oriented. Humans are making actions on chain. They look at the data, they make actions on chain, but that will change. And it's already starting to change. For example, you can give, you know, an AI agent some money and it can go and trade on your behalf. I wouldn't recommend this because you can put backdoors in these AIs and maybe a code word where it buys and sells automatically. So you have to be really careful with things like that. But that experimentation is already happening and that will only expand and explode. And that's where Semiotic, one of the core developers behind the graph, is really focused today in opening up inference and thus agents on top of the graph so that agents can make actions on chain as well as humans.
Got it. Okay. And are there other use cases you're looking to implement within the next 12 months that kind of, you know, unlock AI?
Absolutely. Yeah. So Semiotic is working on a data service. And within the graph, it started out, it was the foundation in EdgeNode. EdgeNode is one of the core developers behind the graph. We invented the protocol, but now the ecosystem has grown and expanded to many different core developers and a huge ecosystem of, you know, over 300,000 people. And so it's really amazing to see that happen. But with that and with this world of data services, we have all of these different companies that are helping to unlock these different data pieces, of which Semiotic is one. And they're working on implementing this AI data service, and that will be LLMs as well as image and auto generation. So they're working on enabling that on the Graph Network, which I'm really, really excited for.
Very cool. And that's within the next 12 months, right? That's kind of like the plan there?
Yes, that's the plan.
Okay. What about long term? Like, where do you see this kind of going for AI apps tailored to the Web3 ecosystem?
Yeah, I think, you know, with that, any application can then launch permissionlessly on top of the graph. So you'll see this explosion. And we're also working on verifiability. And with that, you can then have a lot of other projects composing on top of the graph, and you can see where that data and information, you can see where it comes from. So you can kind of verify that, which isn't something that you can do on the traditional web today very easily. And so within the blockchain space, that'll create just this explosion of new applications on the graph permissionlessly. So kind of similar to what we saw with DeFi.
And during the rapid fire, you kind of brought up L2s, which is kind of the blockchain you see the most promise in, aside from Ethereum and Bitcoin and so on. How do you think the Web3 infrastructure has evolved over the years, L2s considered, to fit into other sectors? And like, what kind of role does that play in the AI growth as well? I'm assuming like speed and efficiency will definitely be a factor there.
Absolutely. Yes. And it also, there's this explosion when it comes to these different blockchains, and the blockchains, a lot of applications will not launch on top of a blockchain or a layer two or a side chain without the graph's support. And a lot of applications exist across many different chains, and that's only growing. We have a lot of application specific chains today. That's increasing. The number you were looking at, layer threes. So that explosion is only going to continue happening. And it's really difficult. We mentioned those, you know, spinning up an indexer internally. It's really difficult to do that across hundreds of chains. Right now, the graph supports 40 plus different blockchains and layer twos, and that's only growing. And what I would like to see is for that to be permissionless as well, for anyone to be able to add a blockchain, a layer two, a layer three, an app chain to the decentralized network permissionlessly. And we're working on an SDK to unlock that. But today the core devs add those chains.
So you have to like manually allow them to be a part of it then, like those 40 plus, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of internal work that has to be done, but yeah, that we want to change that.
Cool, okay. Looking at the bigger picture, Tegan, how do you ultimately think Web3 can become like the perfect place for Web2 developers, AI devs, and so on to land?
Yeah, you know, I think the tools have gotten a lot easier in Web3, though there's still work to be done in making it as easy to use as Web2. But I think that with these new channels of monetization, with the graphs micropayments, developers can monetize their APIs, their applications, or really any of these other kind of data services that are being born. With inference, with LLMs, you can then search data on the blockchain in a different, it's a different way as opposed to just building an application. And I'm really excited for that to kind of lower the barrier to entry for people around the world. You can ask any question in any language, Mandarin, whatever, you know, English, and get a response. And I think that that's a really exciting kind of use case. So yes, I think that the Web2 developers are, AI might just be the unlock to bring in the Web2 developers.
Amazing. We shall see. Tegan, on that note, can you leave us with a piece of advice for our listeners? Maybe something that you've carried with you throughout your career in Web3?
My biggest tip for success is just making decisions quickly. And a decision isn't permanent. And I think sometimes when we approach decisions, some decisions are permanent, but for the decisions that are permanent, make decisions really quickly. And I definitely did that when I left Wall Street. I jumped into crypto full time. I was at my first role for 3 months before I changed what I wanted to work on as I learned more about crypto. And a lot of my friends on Wall Street that I would consider much more brilliant than I am are still on Wall Street asking me, should I get into crypto? Should I get into crypto? You know, half a decade later, they still haven't gotten into crypto. And I would say just make the decision, take the leap, and it's, you know, it's not permanent.
I love that. Tegan, thank you for coming on the show today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll be back next week with conversations around what's going on in the wild world of Web3 with top players in the crypto ecosystem. You can keep up with us on Spotify, Apple Music, or your favorite pod platform, and subscribe to our companion newsletter, also called Chain Reaction. Links to the newsletter and stories we talked about can be found in our show notes, and be sure to follow us at @chain_reaction on Twitter. Chain Reaction is hosted by myself, Jacqueline Melanick, and produced by Maggie Stamets, with assistance from Yashad Kulkarni and editing by Kel. Bryce Durbin is our illustrator, and Henry Picavet manages TechCrunch audio products. Thanks for listening in. See you next time.